meeting will come to order. not quite sure we have a quorum yet, so we'll hold on the minutes until a little bit later. Members, I don't see Representative Earhart here, but someone as knowledgeable about transportation as Representative Earhart actually asked me, why are we going to be dealing in capital investment with transit corridors? And, of course, the bonding bill is where we have funded the state portion of transit corridors for quite some time. At this point, it is still the only tool we have. So, in fact, even though we're not the Transportation Committee, we, in fact, have a portion of that. I do have to tell you, once in a while, your life's work sort of comes full cycle. And you'll forgive me if I hold up an old map. This is down here in the corner. You see August 2004. In August 2004, this particular map of transit corridors in the metro area was their 2030 plan. And you see up in the upper left corner, I took my black magic marker at the time, and I crossed out 2030, and I wrote in 2020. And in a sense, that idea of being more aggressive and moving more quickly sets the stage for the presentation today. So when you see what's been your life's work sort of come together at a point in time, it makes some of this worthwhile. We're joined today by Jay Coles, who is the chair of the Itasca Project Transportation Working Group, and then we'll also hear from our three major chambers. You have three handouts. Jay Coles is going to address two of them. One is just the executive summary of their report, and then he has this piece that just is their PowerPoint, and then we'll hear later from the chamber. So welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Hausman. My name is Jay Coles. I'm president of Unity Avenue Associates, a small office based in Minneapolis. But I serve in a volunteer capacity as chair of the transportation initiative of the Itasca project.
And you might just tell them a little bit about who, you know, the some of the major players in the Itasca group, or are they listed on your, maybe the last page, right?
Well, I've just moved ahead two slides in your packet, maybe okay. If you turn over the okay. First page. This is an introduction to Itasca. It's an employer-led civic alliance that began about 10 years ago. Excuse me. And it formed as a result of a sense that there was not a an active engagement of the large employer leaders in the metro area with their counterparts in education, foundation, political leadership, to look at the metro region as a whole and identify some key strategic initiatives that would help maintain our economic competitiveness, our quality of life, and address some of the socioeconomic disparities that the business community in particular was aware of in the metro area. We're roughly about 50 participants. Were led by the private sector CEOs, but we include leaders like the governor, as you can see, the mayors of Minneapolis and St. Paul, chair of the Met Council, leaders of University of Minnesota, MinSCU, several of our largest foundations. Excuse me. I've turned the page here to identify our current priorities. Itasca has, over the course of the 10 years, worked to identify what it viewed as the urgent priorities of the time. These are the three that for the last couple of years Itasca has landed on and appears to be committed to for the foreseeable future. These include generating high-quality job growth, advancing a comprehensive and aligned transportation system, and I might add that that particular goal, priority of Itasca, has been there from our beginning 10 years ago. And then third, improving our region's education system. And at the core of our all of our priorities are our project goals: to raise the economic competitiveness, maintain our quality of life, and reduce and eliminate disparities. We found ourselves, we've been observing and participating in and encouraging prudent investment in the metro region's transportation system these past 10 years, particularly to develop a full multimodal system, which we think involves a robust transit system as well as a robust roads and highway system. And we found ourselves a couple of years ago saying, what was it that was needed in our view for our membership, for our leadership, to further identify the value specifically of the investment in transit? And we resorted to a framework which is very familiar in the business world, which is return on investment. That is to say, if you have a large capital project, rather than refer to benefits and outcomes in kind of a broad, undefined, unquantifiable ways, can you in fact measure the precise returns that you get for the precise capital and operating investment that you're going to make? So we decided to commission an independent research project that essentially followed this business framework. We looked for the best technical consultants that we could find in the country. We hired Cambridge Systematics, and we developed a local technical advisory committee to help us vet all the assumptions. As you can imagine, a study like this depends greatly on the kinds of assumptions you make. We asked three questions. If the 2030 Metro Council transit plan for the metro area, I've almost said the 2020 plan, Chair Hausman, if the full regional transit system as envisioned by the Met Council were to be built, what would the return be? That calls currently for the system to be built by the year 2030. If we could make an even faster investment and faster build out, say in 10 years' time, how would that change the return on investment? And thirdly, many communities that develop transit systems experience that the regional growth in the area begins to cluster around the transit corridors. And we're not talking here about adding or inducing economic growth, and I'll get clearer about that in a moment. But we're talking about what if the growth dynamic within the region began to align itself more forcefully around these stations. Would that change the return on investment? So we compared four scenarios. Currently maintaining our current transit options and the completion of the Central Corridor. The base case is building out the 2030 plan with three new LRT lines, which would be Southwest, Botno, and a gateway light rail line, presumably, in East Metro. Four completed BRT corridors and nine arterial BRTs. And I might add, we're not being prescriptive here in saying we know exactly which corridors and exactly whether we have the technology assigned to the precise corridor. We're operating at a schematic level following the Met Council's view of what the capacity needed will be by the year 2030. Plan 2 suggests that we accelerate that build out by 7 years, and Plan 3 is, as I said, based upon the experience in other cities, this increase of allocation of expected growth to the areas around the transit stations, particularly the fixed transit stations. Here's the familiar map, and I don't think this is new news. This is a Met Council 2030 Transitway Plan. Uh, And we calculated six different kinds of impacts. And these are established on the basis of research nationally. We really wanted to rely on those things that were well researched and would provide direct accountability. So these are vehicle operating costs, travel times, shippers and logistics costs, and you can see the list here. What I want to make a stress again is that what we do not include as a kind of impact is economic growth. Any kind of assumption that in building the transit corridors or the transit system that we would be assuming that this will lead to greater economic growth. We wanted to be very conservative in our assumption. We can imagine that that might happen. We can imagine certainly that it would support the economic growth that is forecast. But it does not include that in our analysis. And when we looked at the investment, we included not just the capital costs of building out the transit system, but in fact operations and maintenance costs through the period under study. And the period under study is actually to the year 2045. So this is building the system by 2030 and operating it for 15 years, and then looking at the returns and the costs over that period of time. The bottom line is that we found that there were significant returns to the community as a result of these investments. As you can see, if $4.3 billion is the investment required to build out the 2030 regional plan, with a return of $6.5 to $10 billion if we continued on the 2030 time frame. If we were able to accelerate that, it would be more costly to us because we would be spending the money sooner. And we would be incurring a longer period of operating and maintenance costs. That makes sense. The system is up and running 7 years earlier, so over this time period between 2023 and 2045, we have more years of cost and maintenance. So the cost would go up to almost $5.3 billion. But you can see that we'd also realize increased returns as a result of being done earlier. And then finally, there are significant returns additionally if, in fact, we experience the kind of clustering of a certain amount of the projected expected growth, not induced by the system, but the expected growth for the region, if it clustered around the transit system. And the returns, I might add, if you look at the far right-hand column, the internal rate of return, those are very strong from a business analysis standpoint. And again, these tie very directly to measurable returns for the region. Here's a breakdown of the direct impacts. As you can see, by far the largest value is in travel time savings and reliability. And this is a very key point to this study, and I want to spend just a moment on it. This is not only because of the time savings for those who find transit to be a faster or more reliable form of transportation than auto, but it is significantly time savings and reliability for everybody who uses the road and highway system. In fact, what this reflects is that as a portion of the car driving population, and I might add the future 900,000 projected growth in the region between now and either 2030 or 2040, but the projected 900,000 that are anticipated to come here, as they arrive, a certain portion, if the transit system is available to them, they will use that transit system, and the result is that our highway and freeway system works significantly more effectively in relieving congestion and providing reliability to shippers, commuters, and to residents of the area. You can see, too, that for those who reduce their car usage, there's significant vehicle operating cost savings, shipper reduction in emissions, even down to pavement maintenance savings because the road system is being used less. So one of the takeaways from this is that this is not simply an investment in a transit system with the benefits that transit per se provides to the community for its particular features, but in fact it's an investment in your road system, your existing capacity, working more effectively and being able to accommodate growth in the years to come.
Representative Riddle, did you have a question to this slide?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just heard on, I think this morning on the radio, the average commuter time that is spent in cars, I think it's like 34 hours. Do you have any idea how much more this would reduce the time of the people spend in cars in traffic?
Mr. Coles.
Representative, thank you, Chair. Representative, I'm not familiar. I didn't hear that story this morning, so I don't know exactly what's being measured in your comment, and I don't know the exact metric. I think we've got to be there will have to be continued investments in bottlenecks in our road system, and where affordable, obviously certain strategic expansions, but we cannot, there is not adequate funds to build roads for the projected growth and for the, and to ease the congestion that we're describing, other than to invest in a transit system that complements and moves people off the roadways. I think a secondary effect also that is very important is that by making the entire transportation system flow more effectively, provide greater access, we are making more jobs available to more of our existing population. In fact, with the transit build-out, we see that within a 30-minute commute that there's an increase of nearly 25% or 22% of our population that would have access to jobs. And this is very valuable to business because essentially it is an investment then which is making available to them a much larger labor pool within the existing metro region. And as we find the competition for talent and the competition for workers becoming more intense with the retirement of the baby boom generation, this access to the labor pool and similarly for the workers' access to job opportunities, I think, is a very important benefit of this kind of investment. There are two other things that we would note. These are not included in our return. We are projecting $4.3 billion in construction. We name that. That obviously is a multiplier in the economy, but we are not attempting to measure that in our return. And that is reflected also in 30,000 construction jobs, FDE construction jobs, over the period of this build-out period. Also not reflected in our returns. These are additional benefits. In addition to our quantitative analysis, we interviewed employers throughout the metro, and there were several themes. One is the ability to attract employees and the importance of offering a transit option in order for them to have access to the labor force, to attract employees and retain those employees. In certain industries, higher density development and greater customer access is viewed as a positive. And there is an important caution that transit must be connected to and aligned with destinations and other modes of transit. The point here is what's important about the transit alternative, in addition to our road and highway system, is that they must be connected. They must be thought of as a single system, and in many respects, it's that last quarter mile or half mile connection to the transit stations, to the opportunity to connect between the different systems that is going to be critical to observe as we do our build-out.
And particularly the one quote, our younger workers show a higher level of interest in transit. I think you're going to hear that theme repeated when our chambers talk about their experience in comparisons with competitive cities.
Correct. In summary, Chair Houseman, on page 15, this is a summary of the quantitative results that I just described, as well as the increased access to employers and the construction jobs, and the qualitative conclusion that a comprehensive transit system is critical to attract and retain employees in the views of metro regional businesses. Now, with that, I'd be happy to take any questions. You'll see in the appendix some of our key assumptions. The members of the task force, which approved and guided the creation of this study, as well as the technical advisory committee, which worked with us to vet the assumptions used in this study. I think that is all that is in the packet. The complete technical report has been made available to you, Chair House.
And just to note on those, when they interviewed employees, if you happen to note the source at the bottom, they are among our biggest employers. Target, United Health, U.S. Bank, Xcel Energy, among others. And in the appendix, it gives you a little bit of a sense of who some of the players were on the Itasca Project Transportation Task Force to give you a sense of the interest in this. And then I think we'll get all of the information on the table before questions. So who's are we starting with Mr. Klingel? And now, members, we're moving to this PowerPoint.
Yes, we will, won't we?
No, we'll just go without the screen.
Yeah, we can.
Really?
We all have it, and we're not sure we have the same.
Okay.
I don't think they necessarily have unity.
Good morning, Chair Houseman, members of the committee. I'm Todd Klingel, the president of the Minneapolis Regional Chamber, and I will be the first of your three chamber speakers this morning. Actually, pleasantly surprised to see so many of you able to get in here this morning, given the transportation issues. You must have all taken the train. Okay,
maybe
so
not yet.
Yes, not yet. Our presentation is to explain why business cares about transportation, and particularly why it cares about transit in the metro area. We are not going to use the screens. We're going to use the PowerPoint or the printout at your places, the one that says the benefits of complete regional transit system. On the second page of that, the key for us is that transit gets people to work. 80% of the people going riding a bus, and that is 81 million rides in 2012. 80% of those are either going to work or school. The breakdown is 67% are going to their job, and 13% are going to school so they can be prepared for their job. 40% of downtown Minneapolis comes by transit, and for some of our biggest businesses, it is a higher ratio than that, with 50% for U.S. Bank and 60% for Ameriprise. And some of you had taken us up on the opportunity to come over to Minneapolis and tour Southwest, and when you did so, you came downtown and they stood at Marquette and Fifth and saw thousands and thousands of people getting on buses heading out of town at the end of the workday between 4 and 5 o'clock. The next slide shows our pearl in the oyster, and the purpose of that is to let you know how critical it is that we bring the 18 to 34-year-old to Minnesota. One, let's keep all the ones that we have and make sure they're as productive as possible. That gets into workforce, not a discussion for today. But the other one is you can't lie about demographics, and the demographics say we will not have the workers we need in the future to fuel the jobs our businesses will require. And if we don't have them, we need to import them. So what brings them here? I almost guarantee you it is not the weather, but it can be a whole bunch of other pieces. And one of those pieces is transit. And on the next page, you see the young people using transit. Companies are recruiting, targeting the next generation of talented workers, and they increasingly prefer, as Chair Houseman mentioned earlier, urban lifestyles and mass transit. For us, at my age, freedom was getting car keys to any kind of a vehicle that ran when you turned 16. Today, for young people, freedom is, good, I don't have to worry about driving. I can stay on my iPad. I can stay connected. I can do my work and get myself to my job. And if you look at the people riding this bus, you can see exactly that's happening. Hopefully, they wouldn't be doing that if they were driving. The next slide shows that other regions get this more than we have. And I want to explain here, this isn't a matter of trying to keep up with the Joneses. This is, do we want to be a viable state and region in the years ahead? And transit is an essential component of that viability. So if you look at Minneapolis-St. Paul, the Minnesota's engagement in transit compared to the cities that many of whom we compete with, obviously we're not competing heavily with New York and some of those, but look at Phoenix, even Denver. Denver's kind of the poster child. We took 90 business and civic leaders to Denver last fall to look at what they're doing and why and how they are funding it. And the head of their downtown association there said, everything we do at the downtown association is to draw the 25 to 34-year-old to Denver. Everything we do is with that lens. And I said, what about empty nesters? Don't you want them? Oh, we're going to get them anyway. We'll get them, but we need to bring people to Denver that aren't here now. And from that person to the mayor to the governor, without exception, said it's transit that is driving that for us. On the next slide, you can see how right they are. They're the number one destination for millennials. The Minneapolis-St. Paul market ranked 39th in the 2011 study. And then here's Mayor Hancock. They are coming for transit. And then a specific example, they won the new U.S. Patent Office. And according to their records, when they were working on it, the office came for the number one reason because of transit and the young people that the patent office thought would be drawn to the community because of that. And you can see the economic value of just that one office, much less the prestige of having them there. Mike Langley often joins us at the podium here, and he is representing Greater MSP. And Greater MSP is now in its second year out telling our story to the nation and the world. And when people come here, he tells us to look at the Minneapolis-St. Paul market. The first question is, tell me about your workforce. I hear it's pretty good. And indeed, we at the moment get to tout a good workforce. And then secondly, tell us what your plans are for your transportation infrastructure and your transit grid. And there, the story is not what we hope it will be when we can say, here is the 2030 plan and here's how we are funding it. We know we're at the bonding committee. And so we will be talking specifically about bonding, but I might mention that when Mr. Coles was speaking about the benefits that come to others, not just those riding transit, many of those benefits come to Greater Minnesota. And talking to some of our chamber friends around the state, they have people that need to bring goods and services through the metro area, either to the metro area or heading south or other parts of the country, and they get slowed down in getting through here. And so they see the value as well in having an active transit system for the metropolitan area.
Mr. Klingel, we have a couple of questions at this point. Representative Mahoney? Was it to Mr. Klingel?
No, it was to Mr. Cole.
Oh, it was earlier. Sorry about that.
One moment.
Representative, Chair House.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At the end of your presentation on page 15, you talk about in the summary, it's in addition to quantified direct benefits, increased access to employers, an additional 500,000 within 30 minutes. Do you have a, what type of jobs, what salary range, any of that information in your report?
No, that is simply an analysis of really geography and population, and not the particular jobs. But it is an analysis throughout the metro area of how the essentially the addition of the transit system would allow commutes to occur more quickly over a longer distance. So what was 40 minutes away now becomes 30 minutes away, and that is a new opportunity in that analysis. But it's across all the jobs.
And then just to follow up, are those 500,000 new jobs or 500,000 jobs within the 30-minute commute?
Those are existing jobs.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. And Representative Erdl, was it Mr. Kringle?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Klingel, going back to the second slide, the one that had the cover of the Economist magazine with the pearl in it, I noticed one of the sub-articles there is Misery for the Republicans, and I was wondering if that was about transit.
I'm not sure that that's really a question, but I appreciate the comment. Thank you. Maybe I could speak for a minute to Representative Mahoney's question. Part of that, from an employer standpoint, is I have that many more people who could work at my company. It gives me, helps me have a bigger pool to choose from for the jobs I have to offer at United Health Group or wherever that might be.
And Representative Moline, was it to Mr. Klingel?
Yes.
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Mr. Klingel. I think when you were starting to talk about the other regions and what they do for transit, Denver specifically, I thought you had mentioned that you were going to go maybe talk about their funding sources. Maybe I missed that, but if that is something that you looked into when you were there, what other regions have done for their funding of transit?
We have indeed, and it's quite varied. The sales tax is often used, but also value capture, bonding, federal funds, other grants are all part of the mix depending on which group you have. And we can provide more detail for you at another time. We've researched about a dozen cities and how they do their funding.
Madam Chair, I guess just a quick follow-up. I noticed a lot of chambers are supportive of the transit initiatives here, and here or in these other regions, have there been a public-private collaboration of funding for the mass transit?
Mr. Klingel.
Public-private collaboration. Well, I can't speak to how much it is in other markets. I think Judy will get into a little bit of the public-private as it relates to Southwest Corridor for us here in the metro area. But there's quite a variety of ways that are being undertaken right now across the country.
Thank you.
With that, unless there are other questions for me.
Clark, was yours to Mr. Klingel?
Actually, it was to Mr. Cole, so I'll just wait because okay. We can bring him back later. Thank you.
We'll pick it up later.
Yeah. And I will turn this over to Judy.
Okay. And we are now on page 9 of the... Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Judy Johnson. I'm Director of Government Affairs at the Twin West Chamber of Commerce. We're a large regional chamber of commerce sitting in the West Metro, representing 10 cities and the greater region. And thank you for having me here today. We'll move on to page 10 and talk just a little bit about why the lack of transportation and transit capacity is really limiting job growth in not just the downtown, you know, core cities, but also in the suburbs. For 10 years, the Twin West Chamber of Commerce has partnered with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce on a program we call Grow Minnesota. It's actually a private initiative that is now working with Greater MSP to retain and grow jobs here in Minnesota and get involved and listen to the business leaders about what are their challenges and their opportunities. And we've done hundreds and hundreds of visits in this part of the region, and one of the things that they do tell us is that it is so important and it is very critical to have a solid transportation and transit system for their employees, for their workforce, in order for them to add jobs in this part of our region. So it's very critical, and we'll talk a little bit about Southwest Light Rail in particular on page 11. Southwest Light Rail has been studied by a lot of people, but our chamber was involved over 10 years ago when we started to look at the challenges that we knew this corridor of the region was going to face. And we started to look at what solutions there might be as it relates to modes of transportation that would work in this corridor. We all know that our growing suburbs are congested and we've got some problems out there. And our chamber was mode agnostic. We didn't come in saying we want to support Southwest Light Rail. We came in saying what would be the best mode and what is the most cost effective in this corridor. And that's very important as well because the Federal Transportation Administration requires that when they're going to put money into the game, so to speak, and fund projects. And for us, it was important also as we looked at this corridor to make sure that the corridor is really servicing the job center. So as you look at the map that we've provided here, These businesses have many, many thousands of jobs currently in this corridor. And that's really important because you will see at KTEL Drive and Industrial Park there, just below the Highway 7, a jog that goes south in the line of this proposed light rail system. And that's intentional. The actual right-of-way continues to go out west. But it was really important that we were servicing those businesses and trying to connect people that wanted to work in this region and also want to work in the core cities so that they could have proper transportation back and forth. So again, it's about connectivity, it's about people moving in all directions, and it goes beyond people who are working because it also services the students that are trying to get to their higher educational opportunities, post-secondary, and also the senior citizens, which we're all becoming part of that population too as it relates to commuting and getting to the places that they want to get to and being less dependent on jobs. We move on to the next page, and it talks a little bit about why this corridor was so important and why we wanted to study it and get involved in the first place. From information that we know, this corridor is going to grow by 60,000 more jobs by the year 2030. We have about 210,000 jobs now. And again, building the corridor just with additional roads and buses, while, you know, at first blush some may say that makes sense, it really can't do it alone, though. It has to be a comprehensive multimodal system. And our chamber supports roads and bridges and buses and in this corridor light rail as well because it has to be a system that works well, it has to be a system that works metro-wide to move people, and it has to be a system that helps us compete nationally and globally as we're trying to build and attract a strong workforce and also grow our job space here. A couple of examples that you'll see along the corridor, and there are actually many, but we've got a lot of new jobs coming to Comcast. It's a customer loyalty center in the corridor. Quite frankly, they could go anywhere. They don't have to be here. There are a lot of things that make this an attractive place, but transportation and transit for their workforce is very important, and they've mentioned that. United Health Group is adding on a large number of buildings to their campus. It's located off of 169 and Bren Road. What's really important in this scenario is they could not expand if there weren't additional improvements made to infrastructure. And there was a public-private partnership in that case to actually put some additional money into the road system. But it is critical that they know that this station for Southwest Light Rail will be nearby, and they're banking on it because they want to have that certainty that their workers are going to be able to come to their place of employment and get there efficiently and effectively. So there are public-private partnerships that are already taking place. I won't get into that. That's not my area of expertise, but we know the business community is stepping up in a big way to ensure that those long-term investments are made across the multimodal spectrum, and Southwest is one of those that's very important in this corridor. As you look at page 13, you'll see a nice graph there. And what's really important to keep in mind here is that we are looking for a 10% investment from the state of Minnesota to unlock the 90% of funds that are already committed. And yet we need to have that commitment from the state. So you'll see that the Hennepin County Regional Rail Authority has committed $125 million, 10%. The County Transportation Investment Board has $375 million in at 30%. And the FTA, the federal level of government, has 50% of this capital investment leading, but we've got to get the whole pie completed, and we're hoping that the state of Minnesota will step up to do that. If you move on to the next page.
Representative Albright, was yours to this slide? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 11, and I'm just looking at the density of, it looks like, maybe 10 or 11 employers comprising 72,000 jobs roughly. And then you flip the sheet and you're looking at, you know, supporting job growth from 210,000 to 270,000 jobs in 30 years along this proposed line. My question is, this supports the notion that we're increasing jobs along this route. My question is, where will these people live? And what is the propensity for them to use the light rail if they have to commute to the light rail to get to the job?
Exactly.
I mean, you're looking at an area in there that is fairly dense, and to follow on, kind of a two-part question then, if we're living in a day and age when technology affords people to work wherever they want or live wherever they want, it could be in Denver or it could be in San Diego. what's to say that these organizations, because of technological advances, won't have the ability to offshore or send them to other places and still get the work done, in spite of the fact that we are suggesting that a light rail is the answer to all our questions?
Ms. Johnson, I think you weren't suggesting light rail was the answer to all of our questions, but one small piece, as I heard you.
Madam Chair, if I could just briefly thank you for that question. Again, this will ease congestion in not just this quarter, but the entire West Metro and Metro, quite frankly. So people in this quarter that can easily get to Southwest light rail and hop on board, hopefully are going to be taking a car off the street, easing congestion for the rest of us. Quite frankly, I'm going to be driving my car, and if congestion can be eased on days like this especially, I would be a very happy camper. So it's not that this is the panacea that is going to solve all of our problems, but it's one component that's very important. And how do we know that it's important to the business community as it relates to the future of their workforce? I guess nobody has the crystal ball, and you're right, technology will impact how we do our jobs on a daily basis. But we know that if we're going to grow a million people in the next 20 or 30 years, as the Met Council projects, and businesses are telling us right now that we've got a problem, I think it's important to listen to them and put together a transportation system that we know is critical to the people that are going to have to move to and from a workplace within our entire metro area. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question specifically, and if there's more detailed information on analysis behind the job shed in this area, we can get that for you too.
And I think one of his questions was to housing, and if I could just anticipate what happens in a corridor is, in this case, potentially a reverse. There might be people living in the city who then have the opportunity to work out at the end of that line and not add to the highway congestion, but still make their way to work. So housing might be spread all over the region and not simply just on this corridor, is my understanding.
Madam Chair, you're right. In fact, when we do visit with our employers, you know, our employers have everything from a minimum wage job all the way up to the highly paid technical CEO, C-level jobs. And one of the things we know that in this corridor and in this region, quite frankly, the challenge has been affordable housing as well. So we want to work as a region to make sure that people can move to and from jobs that are available to them, businesses that want to employ people, whether they live in this region or not. We all need to, I think, consider the region as a whole, and that's why I stand here with colleagues, you know, as we represent the entire West Metro, not just the West Metro. But yes, we're hoping that people from St. Paul might come all the way out to the west side, or maybe people from the west side might take that trip to St. Paul as well.
Imagine.
Go through Minneapolis.
Imagine.
Yeah.
Representative Erdahl, was yours to Ms.
Yeah.
Johnson?
And along those lines, of course, if we did the Little Crow line, they could come from Litchfield.
You bet. That is
but
right.
That was just a comment. Actually,
and
I'm
a supporter of the Little Crow line.
I actually have a question here, too.
Okay. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Looking at the slide on page 13, enjoying a 9-to-1 in return on investment if the state gives $1.125 billion. My question is actually a follow-up to this then, I think. Is this money for construction? Is that what that is?
Ms. John.
Madam Chair, yes, Representative, it is. This is the capital investment. And we all know that once you build something, you have to maintain it. And we can maybe talk about that in another setting. I understand today is about bonding for capital infrastructure. But, yes, it does not include the ongoing operations.
Yeah, Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. And that was my concern, the maintenance, the ongoing operations, because you know, it's one thing to be able to build it. It's another to be able to keep it going. And if that is a discussion for another day, that's fine. But you know, that is a concern that a lot of people bring up. Is the fare box going to pay for it, or how is this going to be done into the future?
And Madam Chair, if I may just briefly address that. When the Twin West Chamber and business leaders and everybody took a look at this, the cost-effective index scoring factors all of that in. And that was definitely something that we were concerned about, too, because building it is one thing, operating it and maintaining it is another thing. So we can get you that information on how that cost-effective index scoring was done and how it ranked in relationship to buses, as an option, a solution for this corridor, or additional roads, and we'd love to share that information with you.
Thank you.
Mr. Klingel, did you also have two?
I wanted to share, because I know there are new members of the committee. The state already has put $7 million into this, so the state's share remaining is $118
million. And just to, Madam Chair, to...
It's disappearing.
There we go. A brief comment to follow up on that. That's important. It's important to know how this is going to be maintained and operated in the future, because it could determine the level of support of members to fund this in the first place. I mean, why take advantage of money now, even though it seems like a good deal, if it turns into a bad deal in the future?
And I know there will be discussion about that in the Transportation Finance Committee as well. You've been to their committee, I believe, also. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is it to the current?
Yes.
Okay. Representative.
To Ms. Johnson, who is talking about slide 13. Is the CTAB figure that shown here, is that include the proposed increase in... tax that's been put forth by the governor, or is this prior to that?
Ms. Johnson.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative, for the question. No, this is just under the current funding scenario that exists today.
Thank you.
Representative Moline, to the speaker.
Yes, Madam Chair. I just, on slide 13, I had missed what CTIB stands for. I know that the FTA is federal and the HCRRA is Hennepin County, but I missed what the CTIB stood for.
Ms. Johnson.
Madam Chair, thank you for the question, Representative. It's the County Transportation Investment Board, and it was counties that were granted authority by the state of Minnesota to impose a sales tax on themselves for this very purpose. It's a dedicated sales tax funding mechanism for projects like this. So it's a local
tax in five counties.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Representative Detmer, to the speaker.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Johnson. I think we all heard of have watched the movie The Field of Dreams. If we build it, they will come. On the current light rail system, what percentage of our commuters actually utilize those transit systems versus all the other people that are commuting back and forth to work?
Ms. Johnson, I don't know. That's probably not a statistic you have, or?
Madam Chair, that's correct. It's a great question. I don't have that statistic with me today. I'm sure the Met Council would have that percent of population versus users of bus and light rail and all of that, and we can get that for you.
Okay, thank you.
And we'll just make a note of that, because that would be a helpful follow-up to share with the committee. And Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, this is of Ms. Johnson, but I'd like the others to comment on it as well at some point before the hearing ends, and that's their reaction to the governor's sales tax proposal for transit. You mentioned they've talked about that on the Transportation Committee. That's an issue that will be coming before the Tax Committee that I serve on, so I'd be interested in whether they... support that or have taken a position, or just, you know, where they are in that process.
And maybe we'll just make a note of that after the concluding remarks. Well, let's revisit that, because it I think would be helpful, and maybe even help to answer one of the
earlier. Madam Chair, if you want to wait, I was asking that because we were on exactly. Page 11 or 13.
Well, you can address it now or later. I think you wanted to hear all three of them, though.
At some point.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, if it's okay, maybe we could do that at the end.
Okay. And then we have Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and for Ms. Johnson or for anyone. On the CTAB, how many counties voted to join that?
Madam Chair, there are five counties. Hennepin.
Washington, Ramsey, Dakota.
County Ramsey, Anoka.
Thank you.
So, and I'm going to follow.
Representative Mahoney.
I was out for a minute. I have a constituent here. We're talking about the Southwest line, and that certainly goes quite a ways down into Eden Prairie and farther south. So what two counties would that be that did not join in, or what counties didn't join in, and would they benefit without paying for any of this? With those particular counties that decided to shirk their responsibility? Oh, did I phrase that wrong?
That's probably a setup, but who wants to, handle that one?
Thank
Ms.
you,
Johnson.
Thank you for the question. It's entirely within Hennepin County, and I believe we all know that there are people that are lying outside of the taxing district that are still coming into the metro area, and that's kind of a fact of life that some of us outliers deal with, as it relates to services that are provided inside taxing districts and people coming into the area. So we're not making any distinctions or judgments on that today. It's just, it is a project within Hennepin County.
But there is quite a bit of evidence that people from outside that area are driving to the end of the line and still accessing. And we actually have those statistics very measured in, at, I think, the Cedar Avenue line. So that might be something
Madam
we
Chair,
could...
You probably don't want me to make a judgment on it, do you?
Okay, Ms. Johnson, please conclude, and then we'll go on to our last speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just briefly, I'd like to also mention that right now, all of the cities along the line, all of the city councils and mayors have supported this unanimously with resolutions of support. The chambers along the line are supporting it, and those cities right now are working very hard on comprehensive plan changes and zoning changes to work on the stations that are proposed along the line as well. And so those things are moving forward, too, as soon as we can get this funding in place. I think if we as moved to page 14, one of the things that I know we are very concerned about is that if we don't move forward with our share of the funding, you know, we could lose our line, or our place in line, I should say, for the federal dollars. And there's great competition for these dollars. Denver or whoever else is out there. In fact, I know our chamber gets calls from Texas. They must have something going on down there wondering, how is it that you're, doing what you're doing with Southwest? And, you know, they're probably competing for the dollars that I'm kind of helping them with some information on. So the competition is fierce, and we don't want Minnesota to lose its place because we know that this is a good project, and it's ranked very highly with the FTA. It's one of their top two, let's get it going. It was just announced last September by the White House. And so we just want to make sure that if we could get bonding in place, it would ensure our place and move vital projects like this one forward. I won't go into the whole article that you see on the next page here, but I think one of the things, and it was alluded to earlier, is if you look in the second column in the paragraph that starts in sum, it's, you know, a state investment for Southwest Light Rail does exactly what bonding projects are supposed to do: contribute to the wealth and welfare of the whole state, leverage other dollars to do so in a way supported by citizens and businesses of all political stripes. So as it was mentioned earlier, yes, it's very important to this corridor, it's important to the metro region, but it does have impacts that will benefit the entire state, not just from time in the corridor trying to move goods and services, but actually payroll and people that benefiting from the construction of the project throughout the state would also realize. As we move on to the next slide, our chamber collaboration coalition has really wanted to make sure that we're in step with the people of Minnesota and people in this region. And for 2 years now, we've done a poll. The first one was conducted about a year ago in 2012, and then we recently completed one this month. And I'll just give you a snippet here, but statewide support for funding Southwest Light Rail with that federal money coming in support of it. Statewide, 70% of the people now currently say that they are supportive of the project. It was at 61% a year ago. In the metro area, when people are asked the same question, it is now at 75%, and a year ago it was at 64%. And we know, too, within the corridor itself, those numbers are very strong. So, again, statewide support, metro support, and certainly within the corridor for all of the stakeholders that are involved, strong support. Just in summary, we've got some bullet points here, but why does business support funding Southwest Light Rail? We know that we need capacity in this area to grow. It's not a question of, do we or don't we? We know we do. And we believe that this is one of the ways that we need to continue to move people in this corridor in the metro area. We know that today it's serving 210,000 jobs, and it'll be adding 60,000 new jobs, and we want to service those people as well. The business community is concerned about that and wants to ensure that there's good, solid transportation options for their workers. and it will connect the southwest suburbs with a single-seat ride all the way from Eden Prairie Mall to the U of M, and then, you know, all the way over into our beautiful capital city, St. Paul. And we believe that's an asset, too, to this metro region as we compete. And again, just to reiterate, our chamber is a big supporter of roads and bridges. I won't get into all the other projects we support. We do support our bus systems, but we also support Southwest Light Rail. We believe in strong multimodal transportation solutions because roads and bridges alone aren't going to solve our problems in this corridor. Thank you.
Thank you. We have our third chamber representative from the St. Paul Area Chamber, Matt Kramer. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, thank you. My name is Matt Kramer. I'm president of the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce, and we represent 13 communities across the East Metro. Members, if you turn to page slide 19, the Central Corridor Project to date has generated over 4,000 jobs. And as a matter of political education, I would note for you that on this slide, I appear facing the stage across directly behind the pillar, thus hiding a bald spot. So it's I think as we can all agree, it's critical to plan ahead. On slide 20, the jobs that have been created on Central Corridor are scattered across the state. People come down for these jobs. These are well-paying, skilled transportation, construction jobs, and members across the state of Minnesota. We have residents and citizens who come for these positions. On slide 21, as Judy Johnson noted, the survey completed by our three chambers shows not only continuing support for transit across the state of Minnesota, but growing support irrespective of political party. As you note, 71% of Republican, 95% of Democrats support investment in transit. And I particularly draw your attention to the 83% number. Support that the state of Minnesota investing more in public transit improvements eases traffic congestion. Members, I think this morning was perhaps illustrative of what we're dealing with. 1 inch of snow in the metropolitan area collapses into multi-minute delays. In some cases, I was seeing Kathy Werzer reporting it was an hour to get from Minnetonka into downtown Minneapolis. On slide 22, the governor's own Transportation Finance Advisory Committee came to the same conclusions. Regions with robust transit systems work better. They provide options. And as all three chambers will tell you, we are aggressive supporters of MnDOT's projects on transportation. We have bridge projects we'd like to see done. We have HOV lanes. We have just standard highway construction and county roads. But we recognize that transit provides another option. I was struck by one of our peer cities in St. Louis, Missouri, when they passed a business-led sales tax proposal to help fund transit, came up with a slogan that some need it, all benefit from it. So even if you are coming in from outside the metro or you're not directly affected, you benefit by having other folks who are making that decision to leave their car at home and use public transit. Finally, members, on slide 23, our members tell us that the changing demographics affect their workforce, and having options, particularly in the downtown cores, is a critical component of economic success. I can tell you that we have several members growing in downtown St. Paul, and these are large companies, who presuppose that one of the barriers to their growth is adding new parking. They cannot be in a situation where they happen to be in Industry X, and yet to grow their business, they need to build parking garages. They want their employees to have options to get to and from work. As Jay pointed out, the Itasca Group, through an economic analysis, developed a model that says an investment in transit generates an investment in economic return for the state of Minnesota. Madam Chair, members, thank you.
And to all three of you, I know you traveled to a number of cities, and after one of those trips, Mr. Kramer, I heard one of your staff at a morning breakfast say that you had come to the conclusion that unlike the model in Minnesota where we spend 10 years, maybe more, building one corridor, that it was time to move two or three at the same time. And I wonder if you could just comment a bit on your what you observed in those other cities that brought you to that.
Madam Chair, thank you. And I'd invite Todd and Judy to jump in as well. But I draw to your attention, members, to three cities in particular, Dallas, Salt Lake City, and Denver. Salt Lake City, certainly a very conservative business town, and in all three cities, the business community, working with the public authorities, decided that a rapid build-out of public transit was an economic incentive to success in the city. In Salt Lake City, they have built 37 miles since 1998. We have built, in approximately 20 years, one 11-mile-long line, and shortly in 2014, we'll open our next 10-mile-long line. It is simply not sustainable to think that if we build a 10-mile line every 10 years, all of a sudden, by the time we get to our third line, we'll be making capital investments repairing the first line. And in Salt Lake, Denver, and Dallas, the business community decided this investment is best served when we accelerate the build-out versus dribbling it out over multiple years.
Let me just add to that, because it feeds right into Mr. Cole's presentation, that extensive ROI study showed that the more you can accelerate it, the higher return you will receive. And that return didn't even include things like how many more people will move here or not leave because of that infrastructure being put in place at a more rapid pace.
And then just to underscore, my understanding is you reported on what you learned in Denver, and that is they are attracting more of that age 25 to 34 demographic than any city in the country. And why is that demographic important for us?
Well, the silver tsunami, as we keep calling it, is inevitable. Many of us will be leaving the marketplace. For many of our member businesses, half of their employees will be retiring in the next 5 years, and they need the people to come and fill in. And our demographics in Minnesota, we do not have those people, no matter how. If we train everyone, they all get PhDs. We don't have enough people to fill all the jobs that are coming here.
And then one other thing, and I don't know if you heard it in these cities, but my understanding is that some, you know, we've depended here on a project at a time where we seek federal funding, and that some cities have determined that they can build a local corridor cheaper and faster if they do it themselves and don't go through the federal process. Did you learn anything about that?
That is true. There, some are using both. Some are building some of their infrastructure with just local dollars, and then other parts of it with federal dollars. Some cases they're not waiting because the time delay of engaging the federal government and going through their processes increases the cost. Also, there's as Judy pointed out, the investment from the federal government is dropping. It used to be 80%. If we'd been really on the spot 15 years ago, we'd be getting 80% for all these lines, and we'd be moving on to some other discussion. But now it's at 50%, and why won't it be 40 or 30% going forward? So some of the other communities are saying, let's just keep going, and some have put significant sales taxes, 1 cent or more, in their communities to help drive those dollars.
We have two questions. Representative Earhart.
Thank you. What did you say, Madam Chair?
You had a question?
I do.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Earhart.
I remember, I think it was 2007, Salt Lake business people were in here, and they described how I think they were building three lines at the same time, and how the entire business community had come together to move ahead on multi lines. You know, I think at that time and today, I don't see the real, what I consider the business partnership and the Minnesota Chamber involved in this. Is there any way to describe their feelings on what we're talking about here? Because I don't see any evidence that they are supporting this, which I would think we'd need to put it ahead.
Mr. Kramer?
Madam Chair, member, I certainly can't speak for your organization. I can tell you that many of our members who are also members of the Business Partnership or the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce are very much in favor of an accelerated transit build-out.
Well, Madam Chair, is there any way to inkle with them to see how they might come forth? Should we, you know, try to get some legislation passed here?
Did I see Ms. Johnson moving to
Madam Chair, inkle, so noted. If I could, Madam Chair, to that
Ms. Johnson.
We support the Minnesota Chamber and have joint initiatives, legislative priorities with them. And it has been a practice that projects like this that are of a regional nature, they let the local chambers step up and move forward on it. We would love to have their support, and we are in communication with them, and hopefully that will happen. But certainly they're supportive of the work that we're doing and aren't doing anything to run afoul of that. So it's just kind of maybe the give and take that each chamber has a role in what they're advancing as far as their region and then the statewide.
Well, Madam Chair, how about the business partnership? They're a big entity that's very interested in all the things you talk about, I think, except maybe transportation.
Well, the business partnership is also a statewide, Madam Chair, representative, and the business partnership does not have a specific focus on transportation the way all three of our chambers do. They have three areas, and transportation isn't one of their specific areas. But again, as Matt Kramer said, a number of their companies are the backbone of our drive here.
And of Itasca, I think. There are a few of those who've also been part of the Itasca committee.
Thank you.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Chair Houseman, and Mr. Klingel, Ms. Johnson, and Mr. Kramer. Thank you for making it in this morning to testify, and thank you for beating all of the legislators into the conference room. So you obviously planned your commute much better than the legislators did, who were all late. Appreciate that. Not all.
All late.
Speak for yourself.
What? just to go, if I could pester Mr. Kramer a little bit on the East Metro. It was very, very controversial when Washington County voted itself into the CTIB, and at that time was very controversial because we said, you know, St. Paul East Side, we're always the poor cousin. We always get the last of the build-outs. We always get the hand-me-downs. And it was controversial then. It's controversial now. My constituents that I hear from in the White Bear Lake area and my previous constituents in the Stillwater area who still call me, they're getting frustrated. What are you hearing from them? Are they inkling to you that maybe they would, that this is getting a little old? Or give us a little update from what you're hearing from the small and medium businesses in the East Metro.
Mr. Kramer.
Madam Chair, member, to the extent inkling has now become a verb this morning, I would say we are extraordinarily inkled that the Metropolitan Council remains committed to a transit strategy that seems to disproportionately reward the West Metro with fixed infrastructure and the East Metro with buses. And I know, Representative, you asked earlier on our support for the quarter cent sales tax suggested by Governor Dayton. I will tell you that our chamber has not taken a position on the quarter cent sales tax. We are working with our partners, particularly Ramsey County and Washington County, Dakota County as well, to ask the question, if the Met Council can predict the future and lay out a 2030 plan, why 20 years in the future or 15 years in the future do we continue to invest buses in the East Metro and rail in the West Metro? And there's this chicken and the egg argument that says, well, the West Metro, it's because there's more there. And as Commissioner Jim McDonough from Ramsey County, I know Commissioner Weeks from Washington County has pointed out, excuse me, it's an a priori argument. If the infrastructure was in the East Metro, we would see greater investment from businesses. So we're going to continue to be very supportive of transit. We believe that this transit build-out supports the entire metro, and we think of it as a metro initiative, not as one part versus one part. But we are going to insist on some degree of parity, that the investment paid for by taxpayers is going to have to reflect the fact that the East Metro, if indeed we are all in, is going to see some of that benefit as well.
And I think Mr. Klingel wants to respond to that question as well.
If I can, the reason we share this table this morning is because we are united in the importance of the region as a whole. And if you think about what is a competitive advantage we have amongst all those other cities that we've been talking about, we have two cities 10 miles apart. None of those others have that opportunity. They are wonderfully different and engaging. So what we need to do is make sure both remain healthy going into this new century. And to do that, we need to have transit that appreciates that St. Paul can't be left out there, and St. Paul has to have the same opportunities and level of vitality. So we are actively supporting rethinking just how that 2030 plan breaks down to ensure that the opportunities exist for St. Paul to continue to thrive.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Kramer, I appreciate that. I know that when we were looking at this several years ago in Washington County, we were lauded as being very forward-thinking because we were contributing to the build-out of areas that was in other parts of the metro, and we were thinking very globally. And I grew up on Rice Street, and I know there's a fine line between being forward-thinking and being a chump. And, I think we're going to be pushing that a little harder.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney.
Representative Dean, you just laid it out there for me, didn't you? Asking me to be diplomatic, which is really hard. But I will mention three lines that seem to get the short end of the chumped or stick or whatever word you want to use is Rush Line, Gateway, and Red Rock. And frankly, it is one of the reasons that I have a real hard time supporting this is because there's absolutely no question in my mind that the East Metro gets taken to the cleaners on this on a regular basis, and we are not even the red-haired stepchild in the room. We're out in a garage most of the time. Just my comment. But my question, you spoke earlier about some of the other cities finding ways to fund this, and you talked about a value capture. That's a phrase I'm not entirely sure what you meant by. Is that a sales tax? Is that a how does that work?
Is that Mr. Klingel?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. The value capture is a plan where the property increase value that is going on around a station or along a line is captured by that line. So if there's an increase in property value along the line, it's a form of tip.
Okay, thank you.
And members, I will tell you that I know Minneapolis is looking at on Nicollet Mall as they think of that as ever-increasing transit corridor, that is one of the tools. I see some downsides to it, but we won't go into that today because we're not the tax committee. I think it's one of the big picture questions to the person who asked about operating dollars. Representative Carlson, you wanted them to respond to, that tax isn't before us, but since the three people are and you're not on that committee,
transit, I've supported my entire time in the legislature, and we're finally beginning to move forward. There are plans as early as the 1970s that unfortunately were ended up being put on the shelf, and I'm a longtime supporter of transit, and I'm pleased that we're moving ahead and that there seems to be more and more support for it. Setting aside for a moment the East-West Metro debate that'll probably take place. But the reason I was responding or asking the question, there was the pie chart of different funding sources, and then your very last point under the summary was we need additional revenue for transit. And maybe I could reframe that question. You can incorporate what your response, if you have one ready, relative to the governor's proposal, but maybe what exactly do you mean for additional revenue for transit? Yes, this is the bonding committee, but bonding takes debt service. That's revenue. There are other ways, as the governor has pointed out, to perhaps fund transit. And if we could get a reaction, and then I think this discussion will in part continue in some other committees, taxes, probably ways and means when they're talking about setting targets for various committees and so on. So if they could respond.
Because we're televised also, just to clarify that pie chart, since it's not before us, the federal government has always played a significant role in funding transit corridors across the country. That number is declining. The state has had a very small portion, and again, the capital piece of that has been funded through geobonding. The counties through the regional sales tax have done a part of it, and then there is always a local obligation. In this case, your pie chart showed Southwest Corridor would, of course, be Hennepin County, but that would be true of whatever county we were building in. But as people around the table have raised, we've been talking about how we construct, but there's a concern about construction without knowing where operating dollars will come, and I think that maybe sets the context to the question. So, Mr. Klingel, would you like to go first?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. I think we need to answer this individually because we each represent different constituencies and work for different boards of directors. I will tell you that for the Minneapolis Regional Chamber, we have been actively engaged in transit for a long time. I helped found the Central Corridor Partnership, which was business groups together to work on that line. And where our board sits right now is that we believe new revenue is needed for transit because the revenue is available currently. If it's $4 billion, this came out from Met Council some time ago, over the next 20 years, those revenues are not existing among the current budgets. the new revenue could be in a number of sources, and we were very encouraged that the governor appreciates the role of transit and suggested one funding mechanism for that. We are eager to follow your discussions on what other opportunities. We talked about value capture. There is a possibility of capturing the remaining leased vehicle sales tax that wasn't caught in 2008, and some other ways of finding those dollars, but our chamber knows new dollars will be required for this.
Ms. Johnson, did you want to speak to that at all?
Just briefly, thank you, Madam Chair. The Twin West Chamber of Commerce is pretty much in the same camp right now as the Minneapolis Chamber. We also recognize the need for transit and transportation capital investments. I mean, roads, bridges, buses, rail, and we are appreciative of Governor Dayton's recognition that it needs to be funded on a sustainable level. But at this point in time, we have not come out in support of any particular means to do that. And as session goes, we also want to keep that discussion in context of the entire budget and other solutions that are being talked about as far as new revenue that might impact the business community.
And Mr. Kramer, I think yours was earlier, that issue of regional equity as being the concern.
There will be other forums where we'll probably be continuing that discussion. Thank you.
And then, Representative, you said you had a question for Mr. Coles, and we could ask him to view.
Right.
we're going to go back to the three of you, so we'll just.
Oh, and I wouldn't mind if Mr. Klingel stays there, too.
Okay.
So I can ask you both a question. Well, I was just remembering when you went over the document about the regional transit system, this one return on investment, and one of the quotes under the heading that said transit must be connected to and aligned with destinations and other modes of transit. One of the quotes is, I appreciate the LRT connection to the airport, but there are limited door-to-door mass transit options. And I think it was the question that maybe Mr. Albrecht, Representative Albrecht was getting at too, which is, we have, I'm a strong supporter of the LRT and so on, but I hear from a lot of my inner city constituents that they have a hard time getting from one place to the other, including LRT, because of our poor bus service and our expensive bus service. And as we discuss operating costs, pretty often it's put back, should we increase the fares? I can tell you that it's going to be a defeating issue for a lot of the riders who have a hard time with their, very low-income people, and they're the people who are taking those minimum wage jobs and sometimes a little bit better jobs out in those areas. And so I guess I'm interested in a discussion about the support you as an organization and the Jews Alliance might be able to bring to the discussion of things as simple as, we have bus shelters that are broken, that are too cold to be in, that do not provide for persons with disabilities, and these are some of the folks who really do want to come out and do work, or want to come back home. And when they're coming back home late at night, or when they're leaving early in the morning, and there's no good connection between their home and the LRT or some of these more constructed opportunities for transit, it's a big problem. And we haven't had great luck getting the kind of resources we need for those bus to those door-to-door mass transit options. As whoever, I don't know whoever said this, but it was right on. And I'm just wondering what kind of support and help you might bring to those of us who are concerned about that.
And so the point is, those corridors are one thing, but getting people to them through good, safe pedestrian, bike, or bus options continue to be important.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you. You are quoting from our presentation, which does speak very much to the point that you're making and is of concern to business people as well, because they know that unless there is a successful connection to the homes and to ultimately the place of business, the transit system doesn't work. We're not interested in building lines to nowhere, as it were. I would also point out that the investment that is described in the 2030 plan, while there's a tendency to focus on the light rail lines because they're fixed and they're large costs, the reality is there's far more bus investment called for in the 2030 plan as a measure of miles covered and there is an emphasis on arterial bus rapid transit, so the suburbs get connected to one another as opposed to simply a hub and spoke system. And there is an expectation in this scenario, the 2030 scenario, of continued investment in the bus fleet and system itself, so that there's a finer grained transit system overall and the ability for better connections. We don't speak in this document specifically to the bike and pedestrian connections, but the quote that you allude to, I think, represents exactly the kind of concern that would naturally encourage that we make sure that those last quarter mile connections exist successfully for people.
And members, the very first city that taught us this lesson was San Diego. They were an early rail corridor, and they disinvested in buses, and they discovered it wasn't going to work that way, and they had to correct that. So we learned some early lessons, I think, Representative Clark, about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just wondering, maybe from our Minneapolis chamber, too, and I'm glad to hear that the discussion has happened. Maybe we'll have a time to have that kind of discussion here in this committee, or maybe there's a document that you're referring to with previous excuse me, other conversations that kind of spells that out. I guess I'd really love to see that and love to work with you on that, because it's, you know, east, west, north, south, any of the various options without those connections, it's really, it doesn't address the inequity issue that I think is also part of your vision here.
So I think that's advice you're giving.
I guess it is, and I'm wondering if our Minneapolis Chamber of Commerce person has any thoughts or has been thinking about this more specifically.
Mr. Klingel, and then we have just a few more questions, members, that we'd like to get to. So,
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, our goal is to get people to work and to school. We want to get as many people as possible to those places, and so we need the interwoven buses, and now Minneapolis is talking about trolleys, as you know, and then combined to the bigger projects. So we are not in the individual cases with Metro Transit as to where they go, why, and how, but to Jay's point, there are more dollars that will be going into enhancing the bus system than they are going into these projects, and it is in Metro Council's best interest as well to get access to as many potential riders as possible. And some of the riders you mentioned have given some amazing testimony when we've talked in past about transit and funding transit and how without that bus line they could not work, and then they would just be on the system.
Thank you very much.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have Representative Mahoney kind of asked my questions, you know, in the East Metro, they're feeling like they're being left in the dust. What do you imagine Greater Minnesota's feeling like? We're going to be asked to pay for a fairly good portion of this, and we don't mind that because we don't want a 45-minute one-way commute. 10%. But when you look at the 93% of the people ride some form of transportation, transit. When John Darius first started talking about trains, he said 3% of the people rode some form of transit. And he says that will grow, and it is growing. And I anticipate that will continue to grow. But when you look at that, that means that 90% of the people, or 85% of the people, ride their cars. If transit's going to take the vast majority of our transportation dollars, what are we going to do with the potholes in St. Paul? Or Fairmont, or Mankato?
They, and I think that those questions do go so hand in hand. Years ago, when Carol Molnau was still chairing Transportation Finance, we did a study of just highway dollars, what would be required if we wanted to build highway capacity to handle the projected growth. At the time, the number was $15 billion. Now, you know how long ago it was since she was Transportation Finance Chair, so that $15 billion, how that would have grown. And so I think that's what has intensified the discussion about moving some people off of the roads and into other modes. And the reason in the metropolitan area road building expansion is so expensive is the number of bridges, the number of times they have to cross rivers, and that just has added to that. And I think there we do share with Greater Minnesota a couple of things. If this region, because this is the economic engine, if it grinds to a halt because of congestion, it will have an economic impact, and there will be an emergency, and suddenly all the highway dollars will be concentrated to fix this. And I've always suggested there's a risk for, there's something to be had in greater Minnesota. The more you can help us move people out of cars, the more highway dollars will be there for greater Minnesota to solve those problems. But to your issue about transit, I've already talked to MnDOT this year. Everyone all over the state of Minnesota now wants transit. And so last year we funded in the bonding bill greater Minnesota transit corridors. That request continues to come to us this year. We could have them in as well, because the silver tsunami that somebody mentioned earlier is happening all over the state. When there are towns that have no grocery stores and no doctor's offices anymore, they need an opportunity. So I think that pressure in greater Minnesota will continue to be heard on transit as well. So responses to Representative Gunther.
I got one follow-up I'd like to have them consider. You know, you certainly, I have always supported both of the trains in the metro area in St. Cloud. And I look at 45-minute commute. I'd hate to be white-knuckled going back and forth to work. But at the same time, I look at, we have transit in greater Minnesota. In fact, my wife manages a transit system in Martin County. And we appreciate what light rail could do. But right now, the demographics of the metro area is, there's so much geographic area that's, unlike Calgary, Canada, that's very much a success, unlike Salt Lake City that Matt Kramer told us about. Salt Lake City's got a mountain on one side. They can only go so many places. They're very dense in population. It's very successful. The demographics for us to be very successful are a little bit harder than most other cities because we have so much sprawl.
So responses, Mr. Klingel.
Madam Chair, Representative, I wanted to take on the first one from two areas. One is, in the poll that we did on page 21, two-thirds of Minnesotans would like to take transit if it were made available to them. And so part of the goal is, how do we get that transit to them? And then one area we hadn't spoken about are many members who have businesses that need to move around all day. They're delivering products. They're making rushes to the airport. They have service calls. And the increased expense to them of the time it takes to be in traffic adds to the cost for everyone. So the benefit is, again, as was brought up at the beginning, not just to those who were on the road, not on the roads because they've left, but those who remain on the roads because there are fewer of them. And the earlier question about cost of transit, and transit is dwarfed by the cost of roads and bridges, as we think it should be. We think it is appropriate that there's billions of dollars more going into that sort of infrastructure. So transit is but a small part of that.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just want to commend you for always being focused on multimodal transportation and consistent in that. So thank you for that. I've been lucky to be able to travel quite extensively around our country and the world and try other systems, and certainly we can learn and grow and do a better job. I haven't even been to Asia yet, so I heard that's just the creme of the creme. But I just want to challenge you. I'm glad you're here and participating in this discussion. I just want to express a little bit. This is a political building we're in, and I'd like you to bring back to your organizations a little bit of disappointment through the fall where you get involved in campaigns. I wish you'd focus as groups, challenge you to focus as groups on the things that you talked about, a healthy region and the community and workforce develop, you know, education and those sort of things, and developing this multimodal system. I really feel that you guys as organizations make a mistake by getting involved in politics, and I think that's a big mistake, and we all would be better served if you would choose to figure out some of these other things like you're doing today and going forth and staying out of politics. So thank you.
Sounds like advice and not a question. And then one last question, Representative Earhart.
Well, actually, Mr. Madam Chair, I talked to someone in the last 10 days that was I asked why we can get more transit stuff in the East Metro, and they said that feasibility studies, and I don't know who's done them, show that they're not ready yet, or there aren't the, it isn't a good market right now, whatever that means. And I don't know who the studies came from, but there must be something to whoever I was talking to that said that. So we should look around and find out who's got the studies.
As Vice President Biden said, you know, that's a bunch of malarkey.
But there is a lot of local effort that's required as you bring that forward. Thank you very much. We've gone over our time a little bit, but we appreciate the time that all four of you have given, and look forward to further conversation. Representative Carlson moves the minutes of Thursday, January 31st. Any corrections? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Those minutes are approved. Meeting is adjourned.